Access number 27811, Major Richard Wilson, Reel 13. Now, anything else that you particularly recall about your time in Cyprus or any incidents? You've mentioned some already, but any others you recall?
No, I think after the ones that I've mentioned, life became fairly routine in the police station. I must have had... I had a corporal of horse from the Blues and Royals who was my sort of intelligence sergeant.
And what was his role? Talk to me a bit about what.
Well, was as filled in with my job as I was, and in order to give me breaks from the police station and get a night or two back in Kika camp, he would then take over my position, and he was as well known to all the police officers and everybody in the police station as I was, and was quite capable of just filling in for me. So if, you know, if I wanted a couple of nights off, then he was quite able to fill in for me. And he could do all the, you know, the sort of morning briefings to the intelligence officer, the battalion intelligence officers, and all that, and was quite capable of just carrying on. Other than that, I think, you know, the job was very routine. After that, I mean, all the battalions got on and did their job.
Were you able to get any sort of good intelligence sources within either the Turkish or Greek communities? I mean, or was it just more picking up?
I don't think a great deal came in from the Greek and Turkish, certainly not the Greek side, because they were the Greek who might have had some information to give would have been very frightened to have given it, because they had a pretty close, AOKA was a pretty close-knit organization, and I think they would have soon known. Although, obviously, information must have did come into us, and I'm sure quite a lot came in through the police network, because the each village probably had a policeman in it. And quite a lot of the information that came in would have come in through through the police net, and then having amassed some information, that would then be passed on to obviously the brigadier, and if it was some really good information, then he would either set up a brigade operation, or in most cases, would detail a battalion to go and deal with that, particular place, and it would often be a cordon and search operation at battalion level, which meant, generally speaking, getting a cordon in before dawn, surrounding a village, and then putting in the search parties who would go through the village systematically. It would be all divided up into quarters or whatever it is, looking for hidden AOKA suspects. And they were quite clever. They would often have these little sort of hideouts, and they would be under a fire, for example. Rather, as one reads about at, in prisoner of war camps during the Second World War. So they would either have a false fire or a fire there, and their way of getting into it was pulling aside the fire and then going down into their hideout, or other people in the house would hide people down there. But there would then be a whole sweep through the village. Every house would be searched, probably the soldiers concerned would actually know who they were looking for. They've probably got photographs of the people that they were looking for, because it wouldn't be beyond them just to hide a suspect within a group of people and try it that way around. So they would have. We issued a sort of pack of photographs of the sort of wanted AOKA men. And then when the operation was finished, which would probably be, it was dawn at 6, so it would probably be finished by 11 o'clock in the morning, then the battalion would pull out. Battalions also had their own areas of responsibility, and by continuous patrolling, they obviously got to know their areas well. They got to know people in the areas, and if anything untold was going on, once they'd been in their areas for some considerable time, they'd probably actually noticed that there was something to be investigated, and that's how they operate. And I think I spoke earlier on when we were up at Dablos, that would have been an area that we would have been responsible for, and we would have got to have known it quite well, and we would have known the villages backwards. And that was the life that really went on throughout 1958.
Did you ever catch any particularly well-known insurgent, Greek Cypriot?
There were a number, and I can't remember their names now, whilst I was there. Not particularly anything to do with me, but the battalion certainly, yes, did pick up some known AOKA suspects who were late.
Who would interview them? I mean, presumably your Greek was nil.
My Greek was nil.
So who would? What was it?
They must have gone, they would either have gone, I suppose, to a cell in the police station, there would have been, the Nicosia police were certainly officered by European officers, and they must have had a setup for interviewing these people when they came in to get the information out of them. Obviously, as quick, if you caught somebody, get the information out as quickly as possible, because if you pick up somebody, AOKA seemed to have quite a good quite good intelligence setup. Obviously. Anybody in that area would go to ground, fairly quickly. So there must have been a setup for interviewing these people and getting out information. And then Nicosia Brigade would go back. I'm not quite sure what the chain of command was. There was a sort of overall Cyprus command at divisional level, or it wasn't a division, but I mean it was at that sort of level, where there was another a large headquarters with a mass of staff officers and et cetera, et cetera. And I think I'm trying to think the general was General Darling, I think, because I can remember when he was a very dynamic little man, and I can remember him coming round and sort of, telling us all that we're doing a good job, but we've got to do a better one.
General Darling.
Darling.
D-A-R-L-I-N-G. And he made a good impression of you.
He made a very good impression. Yeah, he was very, very strong. I can't remember what regiment he was, but he was a very dynamic, small man. But he did. He made a big impression.
Now, who was the Governor General at the time?
Well, it was foot. I don't think I ever saw foot. There's no reason why I should have done.
Did you have any impression of him or opinion of him?
Harding. He took over from General Harding was the supremo when I went out there.
So what did you think of him?
And then Foote took. Well, I never really came into contact with him, but I mean, clearly he again was another dynamic general who had a very good finger on the pulse. And I think the Norfolk Secretary, who were out, came out before the Suffolks, who were out there before the Suffolks, I know had a lot of time for Harding, and in fact, it was one of the Norfolk officers who. Found a bomb in Harding's bed and got rid of it before the general got in for the night. And then they put Foote in. And
were you aware of the Hangman Harding thing? You know, that his reputation was quite stern. Yeah. I mean, he did hang people. Yeah.
Not particularly, no. Because Harding was only just in my time.
Okay. What about Foote?
And then I presume then that the British government at the time obviously was, all the time was in fact obviously trying to bring the AOKA thing to a close because it was using up an enormous amount of troops. I presume he was brought in because they want to civilianize the thing more and thought that Makarios would get on better with a civilian rather than a military man. Because of that, a lot of the time I was there, Makarios was away on whatever island they put him. But obviously, all along, the idea was that they were going to bring him back because he was probably the only person that the Greek cypriots would really listen to.
What did you think of Foote's performance, then?
What did I think of Foote's performance? Well, I suppose he did a good job. I mean, he got everybody together. I mean, they never, the Greeks, of course, never achieved what they hoped, which was a gnosis over the whole island. I suppose the end result was the best of a bad job, really, because the island is still split now. It's not a unified country. So we never achieved that goal, but whether it was ever possible to achieve that goal with two sets of communities, possibly not. But I think Foote probably did as he wasn't a sort of firebrand like his brother.
I've forgotten his name actually. Is it Cyril?
Oh, Foote. No, what was his name?
We'll look it up. Sorry.
His brother Michael. I think he was probably a very good politician. I think he was prepared to listen to what everybody had to say, and as far as I remember, the military got, you know, he wasn't one who was sitting there the whole time and saying, "God, I wish this man we could get, you know, would go." I think he was all right.
So what happens next? And any other incidents you remember? You're not there that long, are you?
No, I was there about 18 months. And then in And then we come into 59, and then the Suffolks were due to come home, I think in, it was May, and all the amalgamation side of the regiment had started. I mean, we knew back in early 59 that we were going to have to amalgamate, or it could have been before, that we were going to have to amalgamate, and we knew that when we went home, you know, this was the last days of the Suffolk Regiment. And so I asked to rejoin the battalion, and I can't quite remember what month I did go back, but it would have been March or April, I suppose. I rejoined them. And we came home in May on a troop ship whose name I can't remember. But and I know I was made baggage officer, which meant that you were responsible for getting the whole battalion's baggage, including everybody's private baggage and all the stuff that a battalion carts around the world with it. From Cyprus back to the UK, and I think we left from Limassol, and it was quite a performance because the ships couldn't get in close to the coastline, so everything had to be put on barges and taken out and then lifted onto the troop ship. And when when a battalion in those days moved, not like our today, it moved with a hell of a lot of kit, all your sort of officers' mess staff and the sergeant's mess, and then every company office had this, that, and the other, and battalion headquarters, and then on top of that was all the troops' kit bags, officers'. Tin trunks, and it was a very considerable amount of baggage that had to be taken from Nicosia down to Limassol, off the trucks onto the barges, off the barges onto the boat. It was quite a performance, and was much easier when we got to. Wherever we did, I don't know where we. I suppose we came into Liverpool. I honestly can't remember.
Didn't matter too much.
Anyhow, somewhere where then it all had to be got off again. So that was really the end of my that was the end of my time in Cyprus. It had been a very interesting time for me because being in the police station. Virtually every day, you were right in the thick of everything that was going on, which was probably much more interesting than being back in the battalion and patrolling day in, day out, and often nothing very much happening. So it was my first staff appointment, and you learnt a bit about how brigade headquarters works. So it was good. I enjoyed it.
Now, what happened when you got back to England? You were posted to.
When I got back to England, I must have been with a company, or possibly even I can't even had a company. But we really had. That was May. So we got back in May, and then we were amalgamating. I think in July, we had about 2 months in a temporary. Home in, I think it was Shorncliffe, but we didn't really have a role because they couldn't give us a role in the short time that we were going to be there before we were destined to go to East Lynne to join the Royal Norfolks and become. The 1st East Anglian Regiment.
Now, you were there. How did you prepare? I mean, what was there about preparing while you were at Shorncliffe?
Nothing very much. We probably spent more time, as it were, saying goodbye to the Suffolk Regiment than we did preparing for the future.
Now, how did you say goodbye? I suspect
that we, again, as we did when we came back from Malaya, we went round the freedom towns again and had parades. I must admit I can't recollect a great deal, but I'm sure that's what we must have done. And certainly we would have had a parade in the Abbey Gardens in Bury St Edmunds, because of Bury being where our depot was. And then we had a final parade down in Shorncliffe when the colonel of the regiment, who was then Brigadier Maxwell, came down and said goodbye, and we had a final parade, which would have been, I'm sure, with the colours on. And
do you remember anything about the final parade? What was it like to be there?
Well, it must have been rather a sad occasion, I think. I mean, here was a regiment who was formed in 1685, and coming to an end in 1959. So it must have been sad. I mean, I wasn't commissioned until 51, so I'd only been with the regiment 7 years or whatever it was. But for a lot of the, especially at that time, I mean, an enormous amount of the battalion and the senior ranks, of course, had fought in the Second World War with either the 1st or 2nd Battalion. And it must have been a very sad occasion for the senior officers and the warrant officers and sergeants.
This final parade, was that in the August?
That was just before we went over. It was July. I would think it was probably a sort of a fortnight before the battalion moved over.
Now, who was going over? Had the battalion been trimmed down or reduced in size?
Well, we were still in days of national service, those with, I don't know what the period was, but say less than 4 months to do, probably didn't go over. They would have been either retained at Shorncliffe until their time was up, or sent back to the depot. But there must have been a period of that people had enough time to do to make it worthwhile sending them over to Eastland. You can't just put two battalions together because you only want one commanding officer out of two. You only want five company commanders out of ten. So there must have been a lot of staff work went on beforehand to see who was going to make up the first amalgamated battalion. And in our case, we only had a temporary CO anyhow, because Bertie Bevan had gone and Malcolm Dewar was commanding. But I think then actually he was only a temporary lieutenant colonel. So the first commanding officer we had on amalgamation was the Norfolk CO, which was a chap called Bill Murray Brown. And they also had the adjutant. The company commanders must have been spread out between the two regiments. In my case, I was sent as second in command to a Royal Norfolk officer, a splendid man called Andrew Athill. I couldn't have had a better.
And which company was that?
I think it was A Company, but I'm not.
Now this was the which battalion of the East Anglian? It's Regiment.
This is the first. See, we were all to start with before we became Royal Anglian in 64. we were the Suffolks and Norfolks was first East Anglian, the Lincolns and Northamptons was second East Anglian, the Essex and Bedford and Hertfordshire were third East Anglian regiment. We were all then separate regiments. And then in 64, we became Royal Anglian, and then it was battalions. And the first battalion was Norfolk and Suffolk, etc., second, third, and then they brought in a fourth, which was the Royal Leicesters. I'm not quite sure what happened to the Royal Leicesters between 59 and 64, but anyhow, they eventually became the fourth battalion of the Royal Anglian Regiment. And they had, I think, the Essex and Bedfords, I think, had already amalgamated. I think they had amalgamated in 58, I think. So
now, what were your reactions to this? I mean, how did it go when you got to Iserlohn?
Well, I myself, in fact, had just bought a new car, the only new car I've ever had in my life, and I'd bought a Morris Traveller, and I went out a day before the battalion. And I arrived in Iserlohn, and I reported, the officer's mess was quite some way from the barracks. And I reported in to the mess, and to be greeted by the PMC, who didn't, quite frankly, give me a very friendly welcome. After half an hour with, or no, probably not even that long, quarter of an hour with him, I was rather wishing actually that perhaps amalgamation is not such a good thing. But anyhow, he shoved me down to battalion headquarters, and there I met, the first person, funnily enough, I met was a CO, I think it was of the Queen's. Who was a very nice chap, his name at the moment I can't remember, but he eventually lived in Norfolk. And he said, oh, you know, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I just come for this amalgamation. And he sort of said, bad luck. Had anybody to give you a hand with your bags? I said, no. He said, well, give some to me. And so this very junior captain had this arrived, having the CO of another regiment helped cart his bags upstairs. I then got taken in, and I was introduced to CO. I'd never met him before.
Now, he's quite well. We did a lot of interviews with the Norfolks from the Second World War, and he was second in command and later command. Yeah. What was Bill Murray Brown like? You actually knew him.
He was a very nice chap. We couldn't have had a better CO to amalgamate two battalions. He had a very nice wife. He had very young children for a CO of his age, and he was just a very nice man. You could not have had.
Was he competent?
Yes. Yeah, I would say very competent. Yeah, I would have gone with him anywhere. I would have said he was very competent.
Were you aware of his war record?
No, I don't. No, I don't think we were. I think he had a DSO, didn't he? I think, yeah. No, not really. And then the adjutant was a chap called Hall Tipping.
All one word.
It's two words. No, it's Hall bracket of thing Tipping. He, in my opinion, was lacking a bit. He was rather more liable more to sort of wind you up than to try and get the thing going along smoothly. That's what I always felt. You see, the two regiments were totally different.
Hang on, was he a captain, Hall Tipping?
Yes, he was a captain.
And did he become adjutant in the new battalion?
No, he was adjutant of the Norfolks.
But he wasn't adjutant in the first East Anglia regiment.
Yes, he was. Yeah, sorry, he stayed on. Yeah, yes.
And you felt he wasn't exactly helpful.
Well, I think he could have been more help. He could have been more helpful. I mean, I think they had a very difficult time because the two regiments were totally different.